Guess what? You've wanted an audiobook. You demand an audiobook, mainly because a lot of you said you couldn't read, so therefore you actually just needed an audiobook. Well, guess what? Coming this summer, the audio version of Stay Away from the Libertarians. And yes, I'm actually going to read it myself instead of just outsourcing it to some random Chinese person. Anyway, here's a sneak peek. Enjoy.
Stay Away from the Libertarians, written and read by Remso W. Martinez. Foreword by Logan Albright. Read by Nick Pacone. Dedication to Mom and Dad for always being so patient. For the Lord who was there yesterday, today, and will be there tomorrow. To persecuted people around the world whose names we'll never know, who crave freedom and self-determination. Author's note. Certain names have been changed for the sake of respecting the privacy of certain individuals. All remarks and opinions made are my own and do not represent that of any of my past or present employers or organizations with whom I publicly associate with in any capacity. Introduction. Politics for children and teenagers is all about who is going to win, and whether you choose to be on the winning team or not. Sadly, many adults have the same sports-like mentality. After all, while each team at the Super Bowl has committed fans, you always have people sitting on the couch at home ready to become the biggest cheerleader for the winning team the next day. We aren't as sophisticated as a species as we like to think sometimes. We are all victims of our own innate desires to belong. I tried to be the smart kid when I moved to Virginia. My parents told me that the people where we were moving, due to our proximity to DC, were wealthier and better educated than those in Texas and Kansas, where we had previously lived. This wasn't meant as an insult to the places we had previously lived. Instead, it was set out of excitement for the opportunities that could potentially open up for my younger brother and I. I was the new kid again for the third time in 5 years. I knew very well that first impressions stick. I just wish my first impression wasn't the new guy, because that nickname followed me through high school. Either way, I tried to make it apparent from day one that I was smart. So I signed up for the technology club, where I could make model bridges, mousetrap cars, and build computers because I thought I'd look like Tony Stark and impress everyone. When making that decision in my preteen mind to choose a role model, I didn't think that decision through. I realized way later that what made Robert Downey Jr.'s Tony Stark so popular was the fact he was cool and had swagger. Major characteristics I did not possess. However, I wouldn't realize that until puberty hit, so I settled for being smart instead. NASCAR Club was an exception. I was the coolest guy in NASCAR Club because my predictions for races were almost always right. Immediately, I signed up for Honor Civics, orchestra, theater, and the school news so I could further my advancement as a young Renaissance man. This proactivity did get me lots of attention from my fellow students, just not in the way I had hoped. In my mind, 8th grade was going to be the best year ever, but instead, my plan to show my peers how smart I was ended in constant bullying, teasing, beatings, and even the theft of my gym clothes before gym class one day, leaving me with nothing but the pink loner uniform that was a size too small. This led to the very obvious continuing cycle of bullying, teasing, and beatings to come. Still, as smart as I was, I missed the clues that maybe trying to be a teacher's pet all the time was the reason I get chased by bullies when I get excused from class to go to the restroom. This revelation didn't become obvious until I was hiding in my bathroom stall one day asking myself how I ended up in this crappy situation. Maybe it was because I talked my way onto the student council and attempted to become the homeroom dictator, but we'll get to that later. Maybe. To an eager and young Remso, extra credit wasn't optional. It was mandatory. Because the dumb kids avoided it like the plague, and the teachers always highlighted the students that put forth the effort. By far the most enjoyable extra credit assignment I remember was the 2008 presidential election projects we were able to do in Honor Civics. To a young Remso, politics was awesome, because one team in power could tell the other loser team what to do, and if they didn't do it, they'd get arrested. Absolute power always appealed to my middle school self, because in my mind, maybe one day I could be president and send those guys that gave me nipple twisters and stole my gym clothes to Guantanamo Bay to get tortured. The instructions were to put together a binder about either Barack Obama or John McCain regarding things like their biography, some articles written about them, and why we liked their platforms. I remember going home and asking my mom who I should do my project on, and she said, John McCain, because we're Republicans. To which I asked, is John McCain the guy that is winning or losing? Because I want the guy that's winning, just for the sake of winning. All we had to do was bring some actual campaign memorabilia from our candidate of choice to class, and we'd get full credit. I asked my dad to drive me to the local GOP office to grab some buttons and flyers the weekend before the election when the project was due. We walked into the GOP headquarters, which was at the local strip mall, and from the way it looked, you'd have thought it was the Enron office after the company went bust. Pizza boxes were strewn across the office. There were rows of begrudging high school students knocking out volunteer hours and senior citizens attempting to save their Social Security checks by making phone calls, looking stressed and tired, stretched across the small office space. There was somebody pointing at a map on the wall, yelling as if he were planning the rescue mission from Black Hawk Down. My dad and I just stood at the entrance, looking around at the circus before our eyes. I looked at him and asked if it was a normal campaign office. He turned his head to look down at me and shrugged. The Republican office manager walked over to greet us, and after a quick exchange as to our reason for being there, he gave me a handful of McCain Palin material and wished us a safe drive back. You think John McCain is going to win, Dad? I asked while pulling out my Game Boy in the front passenger seat while he drove. I honestly don't know, but looking at that office, I don't have a real positive feeling, he said. I was a little stunned to hear that. My awesome powers of observation at work once again. So I turned my Game Boy off. What do you mean? I don't think John McCain is going to win because it seems everyone really likes Barack Obama. While my project forced me to pay attention to what was going on with the election to learn about the candidates, I was only 12. None of the issues really made any sense to me beyond what political team I was supposed to be on according to my friends and family. What do you know about Barack Obama, Dad? I asked genuinely. I know he's probably going to be our next president, so we should just watch and see how things go, Dad said without taking his eyes off the road, as if he had rehearsed that line numerous times in his head to let it sink in. What if he wins? Immediately, thoughts of being called loser and wearing the pink loner gym clothes shot back into my mind. Let's hope he's a good president and he does a good job. At the end of the day, it really doesn't matter, as long as he loves our country and wants to do what's best for it. Yeah, as long as he does a good job, it doesn't matter if we want him to be president or not, because the president just wants to help the country. I said with a feeling of relief, mentally taking a step back and seeing this as more of a sport instead of a play for power. Election night was a week later, and Barack Obama just completely wiped the floor with John McCain like it was going out of style. I hope Barack Obama does well, I told my parents as the news anchors on TV began to cheer. Hopefully, my dad said with a blank, expressionless face as he looked directly at our TV screen in the living room. I went back to my room and played with my Game Boy. That was it. All the excitement was over and it was time to get ready for school the next day. Fast forward 8 years later, the country wasn't only far worse than when Barack Obama came into office, but now people couldn't even tell what bathroom they were supposed to go into. Thanks, Obama. I was in a hotel room with two of my friends after attending a campaign victory party for a congressional candidate we worked for, watching the small TV at 3:30 a.m. on November 9th, 2016. A CNN panel literally broke down in tears as Donald J. Trump was declared the next president of the United States. Jacob, one of my friends in the room who was a Trump guy from day one, couldn't have been more excited. He turned over to look at me as I sat up in my bed, slack-jawed, watching the screen in utter disbelief, as most people did. Remso, what are you thinking, man? Jacob asked with a large smile on his face. I took my time thinking of what to say next, but I'm pretty sure I passed out from the sheer exhaustion of having worked 72 hours straight. Honestly, I had no thoughts other than the guy from The Apprentice was now president of the United States. Life will get so much stranger, I thought to myself. The thing was, things weren't going to get any weirder than they already were. Life had already been weird since the day I decided to get into the political scene. Let me clarify further. Life was normal and perfectly black and white until I met those damn crazy, brilliant, funny, infuriating, insane, rational, kind, callous, friendly, vicious, simplistic, and overly complicated bunch of activists, academics, stoners, gun fanatics, bow-tie-loving hippies, and other ragtag, rugged individualists called libertarians. I'm writing this because it is apparent the politics of personal destruction have bled deeply into our families and homes, and the movement to promote limited government and free markets has never been more vital in American history. The opportunity to make drastic and far-reaching changes to our community, state, and nation have never been more realistic than they are now. However, we can't assume we are going to, quote, get tired of winning, as the president once suggested. When you look at historical data from previous elections, you understand that in the ossified two-party system we have today, the pendulum swings pretty consistently between parties in control. The false image this conveys is that America swings between periods of progressivism and periods of conservatism. This couldn't be farther than the truth. One of our most conservative presidents of all time was Grover Cleveland, a Democrat. Republican Richard Nixon, serving almost a century after Cleveland, is one of the most progressive men to ever step foot in the White House. Parties may switch places in the seat of power, but ideological switches are far more complicated to spot if you're a politically apathetic individual. Needless to say, you simply can't rely on politicians to be honest about their intentions. And I really hope this isn't the first time you're learning this. One of the most divisive men in the political arena before the age of Trump was a country doctor from Texas who ran for president in what many saw as a suicide campaign. Congressman Ron Paul, who ran as the Libertarian Party candidate for president in 1988 and for the Republican nomination in 2008 and 2012, re-energized a movement that has changed the face of modern politics as we know it. His willingness to call out neoconservatives and Fabian socialists in both parties on the national stage made him plenty of enemies in the establishment class, but also inspired a generation of freedom lovers who are changing the landscape of culture and policy today. Paul's efforts to promote social tolerance, free markets, and a government so small it could fit in the Constitution, and individual liberty, sounded alien to many voters. But to some, it was a clarion call that changed the course of their lives. Many commentators and public figures credit Dr. Paul with creating the, quote, liberty movement, the multifaceted movement of public officials, journalists, activists, and academics who promote what some seem as radical ideas. I call it just plain old common sense, but maybe I am just crazy after all. I do admit that without the great one, Ron Paul, there would be no liberty movement post-Bush administration, but to call him the father of the liberty movement is a bit inaccurate. To claim this is to say that libertarian principles aren't simply a new concept, but that they didn't have a place in the American political sphere until rather recently, buying into the progressive argument that the majority of Americans are and have always been pro-government supporters of an interventionist nation. In 1980, President Ronald Reagan's historic victory against the American skidmark known as Jimmy Carter officially branded the Republican Party as a conservative party, which may seem strange now. For most of the GOP's history, conservatism wasn't just ignored by Republicans, it was skewered by those who failed to understand it or just outright hated the concepts of a government that respected individual rights. This movement, however, neither began nor solidified itself with the Reagan presidency alone. It began to come back to life in 1964 with a cowboy senator from my home state of Arizona, Senator Barry Goldwater, also known as Mr. Conservative. Goldwater is, without argument, the first major libertarian statesman of the 20th century, without whom Ron Paul or Ronald Reagan would not have been able to make their marks on history. Goldwater's book in 1960, The Conscience of a Conservative, took the political world by storm by simply putting together a concise argument for the reasons America was great to begin with. Because of our culture's foundational love of free enterprise and respect for the individual. Libertarian and conservative principles were what made America great, and thousands of brave individuals in the past and present continue to represent the best parts of our American experiment. It is only in the past century, give or take a few decades, when the spurs of collectivism came out and several generations of Americans were taught that liberty was a childhood fantasy, not their birthright. I believe the man who sparked the fire that birthed the first movement for liberty is one whose name is often ignored and whose impact goes unnoticed. Nathan Hale, the first patriot casualty of the American Revolution. At age 21, when most young adults today are drinking jungle juice out of bathtubs and learning the basic skills of adulting, you can't make this shit up. Hale was executed for espionage against the British crown of King George III. A graduate of Yale and an avid scholar of religion and philosophy, Hale was a true academic, becoming a teacher before he joined George Washington spying against the British Army in New York. Hale died without friends, family, or loved ones present. His last words were, "I regret that I have but one life to lose for my country," before the noose took his life. The amazing thing about that was Hale specifically said, "my country," because an independent country wasn't even at the top of the minds of the colony's assemblymen and legislators who signed the Declaration of Independence. Many at the time thought once the British left, we would be a confederation of numerous states, which we were under the Articles of Confederation after the Revolution. Hale said country, because Hale dreamed of a nation based on the principles of individual liberty. Thomas Jefferson said it eloquently after he left the presidency. He envisioned America as an empire of liberty. Hale died before the Revolution ever truly began, without having a feeling of what the future would hold, without knowing whether his dream of a nation born and raised by people who craved independence would ever become a reality. Without Hale's sacrifice, General George Washington wouldn't have felt the pain of severe loss seeing a young man who was such an idealist robbed of life so early, forcing him to restructure the spying that helped the Continental Army eventually win America's freedom from the British. The classical liberalism of Jefferson and Madison, nowadays called libertarianism, is a philosophy and ideology that, despite its history and rich influence on Western politics and culture, is still incredibly misrepresented and misunderstood by the masses. This deep and romantic worldview regarding the principles of liberty is often hated by both modern conservatives and progressives because of a staunch difference of worldview, or because of the lies and slanders of those that would like the word to be removed from the dictionary altogether. Together, we'll begin to understand why civilized society at large is practically begging you to stay away from the libertarians.